DW.
A new report that measures the carbon emissions for 2017
yes.
has been released
yep.
this week. Could you tell us a bit about what this report says? I understand it's not good news.
No, it's not. This is the Global Carbon Project, as it's called. And it's a group of scientists and academics around the world who like playing with numbers. And they collect together all of the emissions data, so basically how much fossil fuels, how much coal, oil and gas, and other sources of carbon dioxide. And from that, they can work out how much carbon dioxide has been put in the atmosphere. And their latest data has shown that after the last 3 years, which have been almost stable, in other words, plateau, at a very high level, that this year emissions have looked like they've gone back up again by about 2%. But that's quite a big increase, really, when we should be coming down at probably nearer 10% every single year. We've gone up at 2%.
And what's the cause for the increase?
Some people will argue that China are the main cause of this increase because they're burning a little bit more coal. And this depends how you look at the issues. I own a MacBook made by Apple Mac. That was made in China. So is the increase in emissions due to their coal use the Chinese fault? Or is it me for buying the MacBook that was probably made using energy powered by coal? So I think we have to unpick these things. So we know it's the coal use in China. I don't think we should necessarily say it's all China's fault. Many of us in the West have basically what we call offshored our industry. We've closed down our industry and we expect poorer countries with lower labour rights and lower pay for those people and lower environmental conditions to make these goods for us. And then we blame them when the emissions go up. I think that's morally suspect.
And could you talk a bit about the years that it plateaued? What was the cause for the plateau?
The cause of the plateau was again primarily China. China was burning less coal very rapidly. They closed down quite a lot of these very polluting power stations. But what they're doing also at the same time is to make sure they drive their economy. So they're getting more sort of bigger power stations away from cities and they're again using coal. But it's also fair to say that China is also building lots and lots of renewables and indeed some nuclear as well, which is whatever people may think is very low carbon. So China is doing many good things in some respects and less good things in other respects, like every other part of the world. But overall, they are the big driver of renewable energy at a global level.
Do you think we can live in a world without fossil fuels? And what would that look like?
Firstly, many people in the world live without much use of fossil fuels. Most people in the world use very little fossil fuels. They're primarily used by a small minority of us. So for a lot of people, they might see some changes, but actually, to be honest, I don't think they necessarily have to be too profound, those changes. But I think for the sort of wealthier parts of the world, I think we are going to have to see, particularly the wealthy people in the wealthy parts of the world, I think we'll have to see some very significant changes to how we live our lives. Now, that's not maybe the majority of people in most countries, but say the top 20 or 30%, I think they will see some big shifts in what they would call their status. So they have to reevaluate what that looks like. And I think we have to do that overall in terms of what we consider a progressive society.
Do you think it's still possible to reach the target of below 2 degrees, let alone the 1.5 degree?
I think it is just about possible to hold 2 degrees C of warming. But let's also be clear that 2 degrees C of warming is a global average. So we have to be clear that 2 degrees centigrade of warming will be dangerous, if not deadly, for some people around the world, and we shouldn't see it as a safe threshold. But that's, I think, now about the best that we can hope for. I think the 1.5 degrees centigrade, unless we're incredibly lucky with these new technologies which don't yet exist, negative emission technologies, which we hope will suck the carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere in the future, unless they work, and no one really thinks they're going to work at huge scale, then I think 1.5 degrees centigrade is no longer viable. And I find that really quite depressing to say that, because many people would benefit if we could stay at 1.5 rather than 2 degrees centigrade. So all I can do is I can say, you know, have my deepest apologies and sympathy, and the West should have done much more.
And so the 2 degree target isn't even possible with renewables alone?
Well, I certainly not alone. I mean, the interesting thing is that people think that these things are just about the supply of energy. They're also about the demand for energy. Now, this is a huge venue here, this big international negotiation. You come here, there are these huge tents put up with structures everywhere and lights and screens on. I left here at 10 o'clock the other night. All the lights, all the screens were on. I've been powered by a coal-fired power station in Germany. So there are plenty of things that we can do that would dramatically reduce our energy consumption. And if you reduce the energy consumption significantly, if we electrify much more of our energy demand, and currently only about 20% of the energy we use is actually electricity, 80% of it is not electricity. It's our cars, it's our sometimes our heating, it's our flying, our ships and so forth. We may have to make much more of that electric, and then I think you can probably just about hold to 2 degrees centigrade of warming. But it doesn't mean we have to dramatically reduce our energy demand. and significantly increase our penetration of renewables and other low-carbon energy options. The one that people don't like to name is nuclear, whether it's not, it cannot solve the problems, but it might have a role to play. It's certainly low carbon, but it has lots of other issues and problems with it, of course.
Do you think negative emissions technologies have a role to play in our future towards a decarbonised world?
Well, they're already having a role, even though they don't exist. But I reckon that role is not a good role. I mean, they're already undermining real mitigation, real reductions in emissions.
So they're just a distraction?
At the moment, they're a huge distraction from what we should be doing. That's not to say that we shouldn't be researching them. I think we need to be seriously considering the nets, but I think we have to mitigate emissions as if they do not work. They probably will not work at anything like the scale that's assumed in the models that we use to advise governments. And I think that's the danger start. We're already using these models to undermine taking real action today. So negative emissions, yes to researching them. Do I think they'll work at scale? I think it's incredibly unlikely, but we should research them and find out. But that doesn't mean in the meantime we can do nothing. We have to do everything we possibly can. And this is the bit where you have a very thin hope of 1.5. If we genuinely mitigated for 2°C of warming, that would be pretty dramatic, but I think is possible. And very successful negative emissions. You put the two together, you've got an outside chance of 1.5°C of warming. I wouldn't put any money on it.
Are you optimistic about our future, and do we stand a chance?
I don't like to think I'm optimistic or pessimistic. I think I'm just realistic. I think the chances of failure are about 95%. I think we're going to go, in a British expression, to hell in a handcart. But that 5% isn't just a random chance. That 5% is a choice. We can choose to succeed. And when I mean we, I do not mean necessarily great and good leaders. I do not mean all the climate glitterati and all the scientists that arrive here, or the journalists for that matter. What I mean is that society at large, so the people who are listening to this, they can drive significant change. We also know that society is a very complex place. So when people make changes in their school or in their workplace or down their sports club or whatever, those things might percolate through and become bigger changes. And then policymakers see those, or companies might see those and say, oh, that's a good idea. How do I scale this up? Change is generally, you know, bottom up. And then eventually the people at the top supposedly see these changes and then scale them up. So it's a partnership between bottom up and top down. So it is not the responsibility of great leaders, if such things ever exist. It is the responsibility of all of us to try to drive these changes.
How long do we have?
For 2°C, I think probably realistically, unless we start to coming down very rapidly in the next 3 or 4 years, and I do mean very rapidly indeed, then I think we will have failed on 2°C of warming. So we have a handful of years to make some very rapid and radical changes. We know what we need to do. We know it's all of our responsibility to engage with this. It's not just the great and good leaders. In fact, they've failed so far. So we have everything at our fingertips to solve this problem. We choose to fail so far, but we could choose to succeed.
DW.